Ramsey TV.
Got off on a hell of a nice sidetrack yesterday. At least I thought it was a nice one. Felt good to me comparing this age and the humans of this age to the humans of the time of ancient Egypt, and the comfort in seeing history repeat itself is knowing that the sovereignty of God is ever vibrant. It's ever active. It never fails. You can go back to ancient Egypt. You can go back to the Garden of Eden. As times change, as humans sadly don't change, we find that God is throughout any era operating all things in accord with the counsel, that is, the intention of his will. This is Martin Zender. Welcome to the end of the week. This is MZTV. And lighting. I'm not sure about the lighting today. Let's do this. And still, it's an amateur operation, folks. I do the best I can. I don't have a lighting crew. You see all those names when you watch a film? You see all those names at the end? It takes 5 minutes for the credits to roll. You got your lighting people. You got your gaffers. You got your gophers. You got your giffers. You got your script consultants. Yeah, all these names. Well, this production, if the credits rolled at the end of this, it would be my name under it, under everything. Lighting, Martin Zender. Sound, Martin Zender. Script, Martin Zender. Coffee, Martin Zender. Whiskey supplier, Martin Zender. It's just boom, 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 boom. So I'm trying to juggle a lot of things here. I do the best I can. If it was too slick, I'd be worried about it. And I know I would hear from you. You would say, Martin, you're getting a little too slick. You're getting a little too much like the Christians. We don't want that. So we're glad that every once in a while, every day, there's something subpar about your production. You never quite get it right. Thanks for reminding me of that. I'm all too aware of it. So yesterday I talked about what humans are unconscious of. They are unconscious of the operation of God, causing them to do what they do. Today I'm going to tell you via a chapter in the book, The Problem of Evil and the Judgments of God by A.E. Nock. I'm going to tell you what humans are conscious of, what they think of every day. And Christians are not the exception. Imagine this. In relation to the will of God, reading from the book now, men are consciously, I should emphasize it this way. Let me start this sentence again. In relation to the will of God, humans, not just men, women are included in this. Humans are consciously independent. There are only a few hundred people, maybe a few thousand, on this earth who realize that God is operating in them to will and to work for the sake of his delight. This is their actual conscious reality. But for the most part, humans are conscious of being independent. Of course, it's all an illusion. They can accept it or reject it and imagine that no other force but the divinity enthroned within them has anything to do with their decision. The divinity enthroned within them. How sad to think that Christians are guilty of this, thinking that there is a divinity enthroned within them. But it's not a divine divinity. If it were, then it would be God operating in them to will and to work. But it's their personal divinity. So I disagree with Knox's wording here. And imagine that no other force but the divinity enthroned within them. I would never put it that way. I would say, and imagine that no other force but a divinity, a self-assigned divinity enthroned within them has anything to do with their decision. But when we find the niche, assign them. Yeah, niche. Some people pronounce it niche. There's no help for these people. It's niche. That's the oldest pronunciation, actually the most common. Thank you very much. When we find the niche assigned them in God's intention, and this is such good news. And what I'm about to read to you, I want you to apply it to the person in this life that causes you the most problems. Okay? I'm assuming there is such a person or people in your life. When we find a niche assigned to them, to these people, in God's intention, these people are, thank God, the most utterly dependent slaves of circumstance it is possible to imagine. I love this. The most utterly dependent. So these people who rail, these worldly people, and let's use them for an example first, who rail against God, who imagine themselves the captains of their own fate. Now we're getting into the Christian world too, aren't we? Such pride, such arrogance. They are utterly dependent slaves of circumstance. How humbling it is going to be for them when they are finally made aware of this fact at the great white throne. They're going to see that the whole time they were, as Mr. Nock very eloquently says here, the most utterly dependent slaves of circumstance it is possible to imagine. And what a help it is to us to endure these people, to know now what they don't know, that they are utterly dependent slaves of circumstance. Now, I was frustrated back in the day. As you know, in 1997, I had a debate in Fairview, South Carolina, with the eminent pastor, Clay Kent, who was a believer in the salvation of all, but he believed in human free will. He said mankind has a little bit of free will. Very loosey-goosey. You've heard me talk about this. But it was so frustrating. I would bring verses like from Romans chapter 9 and other verses showing that in no sense could man's will be independent of God. And the premise of this debate was man's will can be independent of God. And he was arguing for the affirmative, that man's will could be independent of God. What? How is it possible? For who has withstood his intention, Romans 9:19. But it was so frustrating to be opposed by this man, this smart guy who should have known better. But then to fall back on this and realize that even in his vehemence, even in his sad attempt, the man's dead now. He was a bulldog, but I respected the man. But his attempts to salvage, to construct, let's say, some little bit of free will for humanity, desperately wanted to. It was a sad attempt to see how he would ignore the relative perspective. In fact, I'll never forget him. I think it's James in the book of Acts. So that God in the past let the nations go their own way. And I'll never forget during the debate, Pastor Kent brought that up. See, God let the nations go their own way. And I said, do you think that was absolute? Like they went their own way without any control of God? God no longer gave them life and breath and all? They were suddenly cut loose from the power that makes everything cohere? Do you think that really happened? Or do you think that God let them go their own way in relation to his favored nation, Israel? In relation to him giving Israel his secrets and his counsels and the scriptures? Do you think maybe they went their own way in that sense, in a relative sense, and not absolutely? Otherwise, they would be unmoored, that they would be cut off from God. He didn't get that. But to think that even in his arguing against the absolute sovereignty of God, that man, while he was arguing, was an utterly dependent slave of circumstance. In vehemently and really foolishly opposing God's sovereignty, he was falling into God's sovereignty. Nobody can get out of that. And you know that. And I want that to give you comfort concerning these people who oppose you. Let's talk about the Christians now. They oppose you. They insist on eternal torment. They insist on human free will. Even as they insist on human free will, they are the most dependent slaves of circumstance it is possible to imagine. They are slaves of their genetics. They are slaves of their DNA. They are slaves of circumstance, of cosmic influence. They're slaves of everything. And yet there they are claiming their independence. It's sad. It is very sad. I've experienced this many times. It's sad to see the human scraping for something, and even while they're doing it, falling into the intention of God. They're going to see it someday, but it's great for us to see it now. It will be found that throughout their lives, they were no more masters of their fate than they were of the dates and details of their birth. Let's see anybody control the date and the details of their birth. Their parents, the city they were born in. I'll never forget going to a home on 2nd Street in Past Christian, Mississippi. 2 blocks from the Gulf of Mexico. You could throw a rock into the Gulf of Mexico from there. That's a house in Past Christian, Mississippi, where my mom grew up. And after my dad had died, I went with my mom down there. I think it was like 2005. And I stood on that porch, and I realized the epicness of that, because that was where my mom and dad met, on that porch. That's an important event, when your parents met. Did I have any control of that, that my dad was stationed at Keesler Air Force Base in Biloxi, Mississippi? Same base where Lee Harvey Oswald was, by the way. Did I have any control over that, that my mom was born in Past Christian, Mississippi? And that my dad was hanging out with some guys who knew some girls from the yacht club in Past Christian and say, hey, we're going to get together with a few people. You want me to hook you up with this Martha Ford? They call her Shug, short for sugar. And my dad drove down Highway 90 from Biloxi to Past Christian and met my mom for the first time on that porch. Ooh, that's an important spot on the planet. Did you have anything to do with that? Of course not. They were no more masters of their fate than they were of the date and details of their birth. The doctrine of man's free will peoples the earth with a race of puny gods. It's so sad to see. Puny gods, small g gods. You're puny. Puny gods. It's bad enough to be a small g god, but then you're a puny one, and it's all in your head? You're building a little paper, you're making a little crown out of tin foil, putting it on your head, throwing a bedsheet over a chair, calling it a throne, sitting on it, holding a plunger for your scepter. I'm the king of my universe. And you're a puny little god, and you're very sad. Because even while you're doing that, you are the most utterly dependent slave of circumstance it is possible to imagine. Boy, do I love that line. We object to the dual gods of Persia or the many deities of the Greek and Roman pantheon, yet these ancient pagans never rose to the absurdity of making every man a god. What an absurdity. At least they had false gods that were singular or maybe dual in the fact that there were two of them, apparently, the dual gods of Persia. Two's enough. I mean, one is only possible to have one god in the universe, one free, untrammeled will. You can only have one. And if God ever let it go, then he could never get it back. Once you let your sovereignty go, once you let your only free will go and give everybody a free will, then you have a bunch of competing free wills. And that's an impossible universe. That is chaos. Fortunately, that's not how it is, ladies and gentlemen. Christians never think that through. They never think it through. But not even the ancient pagans rose to the absurdity of making every man, woman, and child a god. The possession of a free, untrammeled, unconquerable will is the exclusive attribute of deity. Only one God can possess it. Our blessed Lord himself did not claim it. He came not to do his own will, but the will of him who had sent him. Not even Jesus Christ claimed to have a free will. And yet these papier-mâché deities down here, all these Christians claiming that they have it? Oh, so embarrassing. It's so freaking embarrassing. Think of the humiliation at the Great White Throne. You mean I wasn't my own deity? You mean I was influenced by everything? You mean I was the most utterly dependent slave of circumstance it is possible to imagine? Oh, shit. I wish I'd known that when I was on Earth. Well, Martin Zender tried to give you his book, The Really Bad Thing About Free Will. Order today. Operators are standing by. But no, you didn't want it. Because Martin Zender didn't have a degree from the seminary. He wasn't accredited. Didn't have an impressive resume. Wasn't approved by the Baptist Church or the Pentecostal Church or the Church of Christ or the Worldwide Church of God, the Assemblies of God, the Pentecostals, the Catholics. Nobody wanted the guy. The failure to recognize both of these aspects of divine revelation has led to incalculable confusion and misunderstanding. Both these aspects of the divine revelation here are the God's revealed will and his hidden will, or his thelema will, his intention, bolome. The failure to recognize both of these aspects, and as I told you, Christians only realize one. The failure to recognize both of these aspects of divine revelation has led to incalculable confusion and misunderstanding. Those who reject God's intention, as the Christians do, rob him of his godhood and deify man. Again, they're trying to force the entire human race to do what God says he wants done, i.e. his revealed will. And since God doesn't have an intention, according to them, then it's a free-for-all. Every human is a puny god, and thus they deify man. And those who confuse his intention with his revealed will. Now, this is a trickier thing. Those who confuse his intention with his revealed will make him a love-lacking tyrant, a hard-hearted monster. This is the accusation we get from people when we say, for instance, God creates evil, or God hardened Pharaoh's heart. God caused Israel to reject the Messiah. God himself has hardened the heart of Israel. It was according to the counsel and foreknowledge of God for the priesthood to kill his son. So the objection we always get from people when we forward these truths is that, well, you're saying God is a hard-hearted tyrant, a love-lacking, malevolent dictator, a hard-hearted monster. But no, God himself avoids that accusation by means of his revealed will. See, it's not his revealed will that people be hard to him. It's not his revealed will that Israel should be stubborn, that Israel should disobey his law, that Israel should kill his son. Can you imagine that? As part of the Ten Commandments, thou shalt kill my son when he comes. Thou shalt dishonor thy father and thy mother. Even though he intends for many people to dishonor their fathers and their mothers. So God would never do it that way. So we see his heart in his revealed will. And it's seen most perfectly in the law of Moses. It's his perfect will. It's fair. It's equitable. Eye for an eye, tooth for tooth. You do this, this is going to have to happen. You do good, I'll do this. You do evil, I'll do this. That's equitable. This is God's heart. It's his revealed will. But again, you see, we can't say that these hard things God does, like hardening Pharaoh's heart and causing the crucifixion of his son by the priest, the very priest that he was supposed to recognize, and we can't go around saying that that's his revealed will. It's not. Again, I can't say this enough. His revealed will is founded in the law of Moses. But those who confuse these things end up elevating these difficult things God does. They end up elevating his intention, not only above his revealed will, but they eliminate his revealed will. This is very tricky. I said that it is wrong for Christians. It's short-sighted of them to see only God's revealed will, but it's also short-sighted to see only his intention and to completely ignore that God is good and that he, on a certain level, please try to understand me, he wishes good for his creation. He wants things to go well for you. For instance, the Apostle Paul says he wants people to live a mild and quiet life. This is God's counsels coming to us through Paul. God's not going to say, I want you to be hooked on drugs. I want you, it's my will for you to hate your parents. But some of us, there are probably some in my audience who do hate their parents, who are hooked on drugs. But it's not right to say that this would be God's ideal for you. Otherwise, you start to look at him as what Knox says, a love-lacking tyrant, a hard-hearted monster. But in order to keep you weak and needing him, he must flaw you by design. And I know you're going to say, well, that's also his will, isn't it? Yes, but it's his hidden will. He's not telling you out front, and Paul's not telling you out front to hate your parents, to get hooked on cocaine. Imagine that. Thou shalt get hooked on cocaine. Paul says, I reckon all of you, saints in Corinth, get hooked on cocaine. But he knows some were going to get hooked on cocaine or whatever comparable drug existed in that day. He knows that some of them are going to visit cult prostitutes. He knows that's part of God's intention, that some in the Corinthian ecclesia were going to visit the cult prostitutes. Talked about that last week. Paul says, don't do it. See, it's not God's revealed will. And God communicates his heart to us, his true heart in his revealed will. He wants life to be good for us, doesn't want us to be hooked on anything, doesn't want us to become idolaters. And so Paul, rightly so, exhorts the saints to do right things. Don't visit a cult prostitute house. Don't screw your stepmother. You see, this must be. We can't make the mistake of taking the intention of God, the hidden intention, and elevating it. That's not even the right phrase. And making it, substituting it for the revealed will of God. That's it. Substituting it for the revealed will of God. So others who wish to believe all the scriptures have to say are not clear how to harmonize his character with the presence of sins. This is a tough issue. Some people are not clear how to harmonize his character. Like, you know, his character as seen in the law of Moses. Some people can't harmonize that with the presence of sin. You see, this is a problem all the world has been having, especially when it becomes evident that sin has a place in the attainment of his ultimate purpose. Sin has a place. This is where you need to know the difference between God's will and his intention. His will is, you know, don't sin. His intention is we must sin. That's how you harmonize it. I'm not saying it's easy, but you can do it by knowing that these two things exist. As Knox says, these two aspects of the divine revelation. I'll read one more paragraph here, and really, I'm happy that I'm going to be continuing this next week, because I love this topic. This is fascinating to me. Even as I'm reading this, I do really not much preparation on this. I just barely read it ahead of time, because I want my response to it. In fact, I have not read it ahead of time, because I want my response to this to be spontaneous. And I love seeing things as I'm going and relating them to you. This is fun for me. This is how I like doing it. I don't have a script. I don't have a teleprompter. I'm just riffing off this text. This is fun. I love this truth. It's so interesting. It's so important to understand it. So I'm happy to be able to continue this next week. But I really want to keep going. I'm going to read one more paragraph. There's still a few paragraphs to go. I'm probably only halfway through the article. It seems most reasonable at first thought that God's will must be fulfilled in order to reach God's goal. That would seem logical, right? We imagine that any infringement of it forever forfeits any share in his ultimate purpose. This is what the Christians think. Any infringement on God's will, his revealed will forfeit God's future plans. That's why they're working so hard again. But further reflection will show that God's intention must be attained, not only through submission to his will. So his intention is not only fulfilled by those who are stubborn to his revealed will, but it's also fulfilled by those who are in submission to his will. Those who say, yeah, you know, I'm not going to visit the cult prostitute house, the cult prostitute temple. That's submission to his will. God's intention is filled that way too. Garden of Gethsemane, as I mentioned early this week, perfect example. Christ, in submission to his will, fulfilled God's intention. So a submission to his will just as much fulfills God's intention as resistance to his will. Everything fulfills God's intention. This is an important point. Thank God I'm getting to it. It's an important point. Submission to his will fulfills his intention just as surely as resistance to it. So let me read that sentence again. Further reflection will show that God's mature reflection, I might add, will show that God's intention must be attained not only through submission to his will, but also through opposition to its expressed commands. The highest expression of God's wisdom lies in his ability to transform every effort against him into that which is not only favorable to his plans, but essential to his purpose. Oh, would I love to continue, but folks, I'm going to have to hold some off for next week. God is really taking us behind the curtain here. I wish he would do it for everybody. But see, it's not his intention, not his intention now to do it for everybody. He does it for us because we're his special people. We are exclusive group of people who are being taken behind the stage and shown the ultimate purpose of God. God can only do this with mature people, and only God can make them mature. Another reason God's revealed will is out there is because even we, before we understood the full sovereignty of God, we needed to hear the good stuff. Yeah, God doesn't want, God is fighting against Satan. Yeah, God doesn't want evil in his world. God, you know, doesn't want sin. God's encouraging everybody to do well. Love your associate as yourself. We need that. But then when we see people resisting it, we become panicked. We want God to get what he wants. When we see the resistance, when we see the Pharaoh being stubborn, when we see his son killed, we become disquieted. We look for answers. And it is then to the true seeking heart, to the person who really wants to know, that God says, psst, psst, come here. What, who, me? Yeah, come here. Behind the curtain? Yes, come. Come, behind the curtain. What is it, Lord? It's all me. I'm doing all of it. I'm causing these people, not you. I'm causing these people to resist my will so that my hidden intention might be fulfilled, because I need opposition. What about me, Lord? Sometimes that's you too, but I put my spirit in you, and that spirit bears fruit, and you are living letters of my love to humanity as you display the fruit of the Spirit in your life, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, meekness, gentleness, self-control. That also fulfills my intention. I fulfill my secret intention two ways: by causing people to oppose my will, and by bringing other people in subjection to it. You are a vessel of honor. And by calling you behind the curtain and showing you that it is all me, you are also a son and a daughter with whom I share my deepest secrets.